The internet's been around for over 20 years, but just now studies are coming out with some results about what the internet may be doing to our brains. Professor Tess from Wisconsin Lutheran College shares with us some of the research he has done. You're not going to want to miss what the internet may be doing to you. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Wells Tech. This is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show where we talk about technology and ministry. And joining me, as usual, to talk through the issues that come up once in a while with technology and ministry, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and thanks for pre-recording our show. This show is set to air on June 4th, I believe, but we're doing it a little early so that I can be in Mississippi with my sweet mama today.
Yeah, episode 291 for those keeping track. Mm-hmm. And yes, so I don't know actually what time zone I'm in or what show we're doing, so I'm going to really count on the map today. Through the wonders of technology, we can pre-record and we can keep our record clean, Sally, where we have not missed a week, and keep on track for that show, that magical, mystical 300th show that we're going to be doing in New Ulm, Minnesota at the Synod Convention. That ought to be an experience.
I'm looking forward to it. And we'll actually, I don't know, have we ever been in the same room? Maybe we were once for a podcast, but
we'd have to go back through 290 episodes to find out. But I think we were once. Mm-hmm. We definitely did interviews together at the Christ in Media Conference in New Ulm, in Mankato. So, Sally, I'm excited about this discussion topic, although I really cannot claim to be an expert. This topic really presented itself from a Wisconsin State Teachers Conference presentation that's going to be happening in October from Professor Dave Tess at WLC, which he has entitled "What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains." It sounds a little scary.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's a good thing that you and I don't have to be experts on this. I think in the interview, we even dubbed Dave as our official Wells Tech internet brain expert. So we're going to be continuing to follow this and counting on him to keep us up to date. But he explains in the interview that he based this off of a book by Nicholas Carr called The Shallows, with the subtitle "What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains." And there's been some really interesting research. I think you'll enjoy the interview.
So let's play that, then, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. We'd like to welcome Dave Tess, Coordinator of Online Instruction at Wisconsin Lutheran College here in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Martin. Pleasure. Pleasure's mine.
Glad you could take some time. The purpose of our conversation is an interesting little presentation you have planned for the State Teachers Conference coming up in October. But before we get to that, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, what you do, family, education, hobbies, that kind of stuff. So who's Dave Tess?
I just started at WLC this past summer as Coordinator of Online Instruction. Before that, I spent 7 years on the south side of Milwaukee at St. Lucas Lutheran, so I know ministry quite well. I was in the upper grades there. Sixth grade was my homeroom, but we did some departmentalization as well. While I was there, finished up my master's and then had this opportunity to come to WLC. Family-wise, a lovely wife, Amanda. We live in West Dallas. Three sons. Kenyon is 6, Cole is 4, and Callum is 2. And they wrestle nonstop, pretty much.
Looks like they're artists, too, by what's over your right shoulder there.
Yeah, some beautiful artwork behind me in my office, my windowless office.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, moving from middle schoolers to working with instructors and adults mostly is has been interesting.
I'm sure there's some similarities and differences.
Surprisingly, yes.
So we've done, I got a list of the, I'm also a presenter at the State Teachers Conference here in October. So I got a list of some of the topics that would be presented there. That's in October. And there was one that caught our eye that we felt, you know, might be nice to have you on to both promote. So anybody going to a conference would maybe be interested. But also, I think our listeners in general might be interested in this one of these topics entitled What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. And that's a topic, the Internet, speaking of the Internet, something we talk about a lot on the show, of course.
Yep.
Sounds interesting, maybe a little scary. Is that something we should be afraid of?
Do we need aluminum foil? Not yet. No, okay. We're not to the aluminum.
Can you give us a little preview about what we're talking about?
So, the reason I got interested in this was when my sons were quite young, I noticed anytime we were near a screen, they just kind of turned into, you know, zombies as they sat there and focused on it and everything. So even from when they were young, I had the opportunity through a paper for my master's to kind of pick a topic. So I just chose screen time. And, you know, when I started that was probably even before the iPhone had come out, you know, which is only 6 years old. So since then, I just haven't stopped reading on the topic. And within the last year, found this book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. And that basically frames the entire presentation, along with just a ton of other, you know, studies and other books that I've read on it. Just haven't stopped reading on it. And I think it's not scary. I just think we need to have an honest conversation about, you know, there are tremendous benefits, but let's be aware of what's going on behind the scenes as well in our brains. So
what are some of the things, either psychological or social things that you're going to talk about?
Sure. So I think 5 years ago we could have said, it was mostly kids with their texting and things like that. I don't know that we can say that anymore, as I'm at conferences and see a whole line of people in the back of the room all texting, or, you know, I'm with my adult friends who feel the need to stop mid conversation and pull out their phone and things like that. So I, you know, without realizing it, this immediacy is kind of changing the fabric of a conversation and those kinds of things. I think, you know, school wise, I think kids and probably some parents of kids have been tricked into thinking that multitasking can work and things like that, right? Because it's so simple to multitask now. You know, they even have things on iOS that's called multitasking, where you flip between apps very quickly. So I think kids have been tricked into thinking it's okay for me to have my homework sitting there while my Facebook is up, while I'm listening to music, and my phone is sitting right here. And I think they think that they can do it just fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for years, decades, centuries, people have always thought, well, the brain truly can basically do one thing at a time. And I think a lot of people thought, oh, now that technology's here, this is changing, and we can, and we're actually just doing a lot.
Retrain our brains, yeah. And that's,
we're doing a lot of things mediocre instead of doing things well. So that's, you know, some physical changes as we strengthen those connections that we continue to make, you know?
Yeah. I've always said multitasking is just a code for screwing two things up at once, because that's the way it works in my life.
It's true.
So as that perspective changes, our brains are behaving differently because of all this input that's coming at us all the time. Are there some good things that are going on because of that as well?
Obviously, tech has ridiculous benefits. The way we can connect, of course, with so many people, so many cultures, obviously our ridiculous access to information. So those are all amazing things. I spend most of my day on a computer, so I can't, you know, I'm no Luddite by any stretch. So I think we got to take those good things. And then I'm in schools all the time doing tech professional development. So I'm not anti-tech. I just think with all those benefits that we do, you know, just kids making amazing projects with, you know, iPads and Skyping with authors and all these amazing benefits that we have, I think we also got to say, hey, let's slow down enough to practice focus, and let's help our kids realize, you know, that whole multitasking thing doesn't work. And so, yes, tremendous benefits. Let's slow down enough to realize what's going on a bit here.
As you kind of look at the landscape and kind of the way tech is now really a part of daily life for almost everybody at this point, it's how, you know, you have to do certain things. You have to do it online. You have to, you know, coupon shop or, you know, take advantage of deals or whatever. But obviously from a Christian's perspective, we want to look at these as opportunities to share God's word. Have you kind of thought through that, or you talk about that, you know, in some of your work there at WLC, yeah, or as you work with congregations? What's its effect on the spread of the gospel?
Absolutely. So, you know, I was watching one of your videos lately on the Bread for Beggars site.
Oh, yeah.
And just tremendous opportunities like that. Pool all these resources together, share them with the world, obviously. So I really like that. I think most still understand that that cannot replace what we do with each other, you know, face to face. And, you know, since all of my work is with online instruction, and, you know, there's that thing we call netiquette, where something I type is just read differently by every person that reads it.
Right.
My concern for God's word is we want to share it, and we want people to see us being that light while we share it. And, you know, that kind of tempers everything as we discuss it with them. I'm afraid if we put a sermon up there and they don't get to see me being a light while I discuss that sermon, that's one of my only concerns. And I know some theology professors, I think not just here, but other places, have the same concern. Like, should we, you know, should we really put it all out there and then not necessarily have that chance to immediately discuss things? But, you know, when we talk about Bread for Beggars and all those other things, my goodness, we can, the you know, global nature of the sharing is just unbelievable. It really is.
Yeah, but God's word was, it certainly early on was verbalized and shared, and communal, that you know, that one-to-one or that one-to-many, you know, dynamic is sometimes missing when technology is thought of as that magic bullet where now I can spread the gospel to the entire world with a click of a button. That really isn't how, I don't think, God works or the Holy Spirit works. It's these dialogues, these conversations that happen, which can happen, I suppose, online, but
yeah,
certainly not exclusively.
Absolutely. Yep, I agree.
I'm seeing your light shining from here in Minnesota, for sure. So coming through loud and clear.
We just need video and audio.
There you go.
While we're sharing, and we'll be
fine. A few more hangouts. So getting back to that brain and the actual maybe physical things that are changing about the brain.
Right.
Are there areas that we should be super cautious of? Maybe if we're in the classroom, are there warning signs, or
sure,
if we're dealing with someone that's maybe overloaded on screen time or whatever?
Well, yeah, no, that's a great question. And I, another reason this became fascinating to me was because even from my first years as a teacher, I felt like I was entertaining kids in order to keep their attention. So I think, you know, many kids come from this just wired backgrounds, screens. That's how it is. I don't know that we need to be cautious because I can't mandate what they're doing at home. I think I just have to recognize my incredible influence as a teacher. And so as a sixth grade teacher, right from the beginning of the year, I said, I know you guys have these crazy busy lives and all this other stuff going on at home. When you get to school, we're going to have to practice some focus. And so what I did is, one of the simplest ways is just to read aloud to them. So I even just said very early on, you guys, this is going to be our practice in focus. So, while I was reading, I tried to get him not to doodle or chew on pen caps or do things that sixth grade students do.
Right.
So I just said, you can forget all that other craziness in your life and let's just enjoy a good book, you know? So I think just those little intentional things where we use all the tools to do ridiculously amazing things, but then say, I have some significant influence as a teacher. We're going to slowly learn focus and stretch out that focus. Obviously, I'm not going to do it by right when they walk in the door. You guys are terrible at focus. I'm starting with an hour lecture today because that's
right.
Probably not going to work for a sixth grader. So I think we can just stretch focus. And then we also bring our cart of Chromebooks in. And then we stretch focus. And then we go out of the lab. And I think it's just helping kids realize we need to practice this. And then as a teacher, just using our influence to do that, I think.
Right. Part of your job, I'm sure, is kind of prepping people for what's coming up, you know, what's in the future, whether they're in a classroom or any other situation in life. Any predictions, any thoughts on, you know, where is this headed? So screen time is obviously not going to decrease.
Right.
I think more and more of our time will be in front of screens. Sometimes they'll be smaller screens, sometimes bigger screens.
Yeah. But
what can we expect maybe a few years from now? I'll ask you to put on your
futurist cap.
But yeah, exactly. And you pull out your crystal ball.
I think, and so one of the things I talk about during the sectional is hyperlinks. So I think 10 years ago, hyperlinks were touted as this thing that was going to be opening the world up to people and students. And since then, enough research has been done to show that just destroys comprehension as we're reading, right? So I think, again, like even the iPhone is just so new, it's 6 years old. I think in 5 to 10 years, enough other research will come out to just show, you know, this is what's actually happening. And I think we should proceed with caution. Now, then again, plenty has come out on just screen time with TVs, and I don't know that that's changed much. So I just think there will be a slight pushback. Maybe, maybe I'm one of those voices of reason, but I think there will just be a slight pushback saying we absolutely can embrace all this stuff. Let's temper it just like we do with a lot of other things, because technology clearly isn't going to slow down, with all the gadgets we read about that are coming out with devices that enable our computers to act like touchscreen devices. And that's not going to slow down.
Right.
So how do we use those? How do we temper that and just again, continue to understand what it's doing to us?
Sure. Sure. Very interesting area. And I think, probably things will change and more research will be done even by the time you deliver this sectional in October.
That's true.
There's all kinds of research done and, you know, there's new screens in front of us and they do different things. You know, you hear about Google's new phone or Samsung's new phone that, you know, tracks eye movement so you can operate, you know, the screen and scroll the screen with, you know, just the movement of eye. So it's wearable computing and Google Glass and those kinds of things, whole new things and whole new social issues that probably need to be addressed as well. And I'm sure that's all going to be part of that conversation that you have.
It's true.
Yeah. So go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, maybe we can label you our Wells Tech brain expert and just sort of
Yeah, Dave.
I don't know. Or just maybe the Wells Tech voice of reason. No, I don't know.
All right. Very good. Well, blessings on that presentation. I know you got a few months to prep for that, but I'm looking forward to that and the conference itself. So if you are a teacher and attending that, be sure to look up Dave and his sectional. Are you doing it Thursday and Friday?
I'm doing the same one twice. I don't remember which day it is.
Yeah. And normally they stack those on the same day. So take a look at your material when that comes out. And that, again, is... what is the brain doing? What is it called, Sally?
What is the internet doing to our brains?
What is the internet doing to our brains?
Which is just the subtitle of that book. So
Right. Very good. Dave, thanks so much for taking the time with us. I appreciate you doing that, taking time out of your schedule and sharing with us some very interesting stuff. So thanks.
Thank you.
Again, our many thanks to Dave for taking time out of his busy schedule as they're winding down the school year there, or maybe they've wrapped up by now, but interesting stuff. You know, some of it way over my head, but some of it very eye-opening about what the potential ramifications are of this internet age that nobody, I don't think, really knows what the internet is doing to our brains until, you know, we've lived a lifetime in it, as our children probably are going to be doing.
Right. Just reading up on various articles, and we'll have links in the show notes to some additional reference articles and things that we found as we did research for this show. Some of the things that it talks about is the digital native versus the digital immigrant, and just some of the pictures and different things associated with these articles are of a baby sitting at computer devices next to their parents sitting at their laptops. And you're right, a whole generation is growing up in a completely different way than we did. And yep. And the brain is malleable. It's not, you know, a static thing that is the same. It changes. There's all kinds of research, scientific medical research that, you know, where they've scanned brains and white tissue is different and neurons mm-hmm. are connecting in different ways and things. I mean, and then, you know, the more practical research that just looks at people's reaction times and depth of knowledge and hyperactivity as they switch and are multitasking constantly, and those kind of effects on the brain as well.
Yeah, rather popular article from The Atlantic is Google Making Us Stupid really resonates with me, because that's a question that is often asked, I think, in educational circles. You know, what is the point of knowledge if you can just, with a click of a mouse or, you know, a couple key presses or just speaking to your phone, you can find out the answer? You don't have to kind of have that in your memory bank. You can look it up. We've all done it, you know, with the smartphones that we have or with the computer in front of us. I've thought about this a little bit lately, especially since Google had its big developer conference, and I'm seeing some different camps being created here. I think of Apple, for instance, as a hardware company. They make great hardware. I think of Microsoft as a software company. They make, you know, kind of the industry standard software, especially for businesses. But Google, I think they're in the knowledge business. They know a lot about us, and they're beginning to put all of this together. They're making things like Google Now, which predict what you're going to do, where you're going to drive, what questions you're going to ask, what things you need to know. And they're somewhat curating that, but they're bringing all this stuff together in a place that, it makes it real easy to find answers to stuff. And Wolfram Alpha and those kinds of things. I'm not sure what to make of that, but I think that's what Google's strategy is, that they're the knowledge company.
Yeah. Is Google Making Us Stupid is written by the same author as The Shallows, Nicholas Carr. So this mm-hmm. was actually from back in 2008 and is right. kind of a prelude to the book.
Yep.
And it's a really good read. If you aren't ready to buy the book, at least read this article. Although it's kind of funny, as I was rapidly trying to scan the article using my multitasking and fast reading skills that are developed because of internet reading. It is a longer article, and you do need to take some time and absorb it and make some connections in the process and stuff. Towards the end of the article, let's see if I can bring it up on the screen. He talks about the fact that maybe he's just a Luddite and maybe he'll be proven wrong and this will be the golden age of intellectual discovery, you know, because of the internet. But he definitely turns back to that concept of deep reading. We heard Dave talk about this in the interview where he encouraged children to just get focused by doing read alouds with them and things.
Right.
Nicholas says the kind of deep reading that a sequence of printed pages promotes is valuable not just for the knowledge we acquire from the author's words, but for the intellectual vibrations those words set off within our own minds. In the quiet spaces opened up by the sustained undistracted reading of a book or by any other act of contemplation for that matter, we make our own associations, draw our own inferences and analogies, foster our own ideas. Deep reading is indistinguishable from deep thinking. So kind of reminded me of...
I don't know what to think about that. I guess I have noticed, and I'm not sure the reason, the exact reason, but I have less patience for long form reading. Mm-hmm. I will skim articles. I do emails as well. So my staff knows that if they want to ensure that I'm reading something, they'll bold it, highlight it, whatever the key bullet points to make sure I get through the important stuff. And I appreciate that. And I think there's some wisdom in keeping emails short because I believe, and I don't know if it's an attention span thing with me or whether it's just the busyness of life where you don't feel, your brain doesn't feel you have time to spend reading through that much material. Now, on the converse side, I do think the internet age and technology has helped broaden my horizons a little bit, especially in the area of, let's say, audiobooks, where I can be very focused and read through long, long books. And I like science fiction and historical fiction and, just historical novels. And I've learned a lot just through with an Audible subscription driving, whether I'm driving to New Ulm or, Michigan or New Mexico, wherever it is. Debbie and I read through a couple of classics that we never read in high school, The Great Gatsby we read and Lord of the Flies, just in Audible form. Mm-hmm. Where I'm driving or she's driving and we didn't have, we wouldn't have maybe carved out time in our lives to read through those classics. Same goes with some, leadership kinds of things that I really enjoy and find some benefit in, and which would never have gotten read because I just don't have the time, but I can multitask, quote unquote, multitask and get through that stuff and benefit from them. So I see there are advantages to the internet age in that respect. And I get very focused and learn a lot that way too.
Yeah, I often think about that balance thing as well, Martin, when I think about how I start my day, because I love to read the latest news, my latest blog posts and things like that early in the morning. When I grew up, every morning when I'd wake up at 6 a.m. or whatever it was for getting ready for school, my dad would have been awake since 5 a.m. cherishing his time with his newspaper. He got up early, so he had time before work to read his newspaper, and he loved that. And, I think he scanned headlines. I don't think he read the newspaper cover to cover. He found the things he was interested in and dug in and read further, And so I don't see it as a huge difference there. We just have a different delivery system. Maybe I have access to more than he did from the little local newspaper that he subscribed to. But I think there are a lot of parallels.
Yeah. And we probably should define terms a little bit. And Dave did that a little bit, too, when we talked with him is, what is this internet that we're talking about? What is the internet doing to our brains? The internet could take a lot of different forms. I mean, is it the social networks that the internet brings into play? Is it texting? Is it, the smartphones always being on, always being connected, hyper-connected, as we've talked about in the past? Or is it just screen time spent in front of multiplayer games or, just in front of our computer? Whatever, and not being social, in our analog worlds. And I think all of those can be good and bad. So it's really about balance. And I think, all the articles that I read, do talk about that too, that the internet has enhanced our lives in many ways, but obviously too much of a good thing always can lead to something very bad and very destructive.
Absolutely. So I can think of one good way. We talked about it on last week's show, the fact that the internet gives us access to a multitude of online learning opportunities, and they're very cost effective. I couldn't attend Google's webinars, on a regular basis the way I can through the internet. So, face-to-face, travel time, all those kind of things would keep me out of a lot of conferences and online opportunities that I can make use of. So,
yep. I get it. Totally agree. So again, thanks to Dave for sparking the thought that really became this show. And I'm sure this will not be the last time we'll have to talk about it, and we'll want to talk about it because it's in education certainly, but it's also going to be in our, you know, in our professional lives every step of the way. So it's a matter of recognizing it, dealing with it, and then figuring out how God wants us to use it. I mean, this is a, if this is a ministry tool, and that's what this show is all about, you know, we got to figure out the best way that that God would like us to use it to His glory. So,
definitely,
we've got a review section this week, Sally, which is kind of exciting. We launched this about 3 weeks ago and invite viewers to submit reviews of different things, technology or otherwise, and you know, YouTube videos or written blog posts or whatever. And we had one of our listeners from out in California, a pastor, Jeff Cragen, submit a review for us.
That's right. I should do a quick screen share here. Jeff has a blog. It's called Out of My Mind, as in out of his mind like into his blog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he recently wrote a blog post called So Many Translations, ARG. Maybe he's a little bit pirate as well.
Yeah.
and he actually did a book review, and not just one book review, but a couple of book reviews about translation issues. One's called The King James Only Controversy, and the other is called One Bible, Many Versions. Are All Translations Created Equal? And I think these are both interesting books. I wasn't aware of them, but maybe a good thing for lay people to get more oriented to the history of how translations come about and the different issues around translations, whether it's a word-for-word translation or the meaning of the text translated, you know, kind of two different camps there. And he does a good job of reviewing the books and talking about the pluses and minuses that you'll find as you read through these books.
And of course, we're not endorsing either one. We're just kind of bringing to your attention the fact that that Jeff did this review, and that if you're interested in this kind of stuff, it may be worth a read. So, and our thanks also to Jeff. He mentions us in a previous blog post in relation to, he calls this post the Techno-Savvy Christian, where he was referencing some conversations we had about social networks. And, you know, he recognizes that we bring those up quite a bit. And, you know, specifically about Facebook and how at times people can mistake their interactions on Facebook to genuine community or bringing people together in, you know, in a ministry sense, you know, in a fellowship sense. And I think he makes a good point, and a point that we've made in the past, that just because you've got this large social network doesn't mean that you have, you know, a true relationship built around, you know, spiritual tenets. And we had reviewed the book, The Church of Facebook, and actually interviewed the author, Jesse Rice, who made that exact point in the book and in the interview as well. So thanks for recalling that for us, Jeff, and bringing that out in your blog post.
Yep. Happy to have you as a Wells Tech community member, and thanks for your contribution, and we'll look for more.
He lives out in my old stomping grounds. He's in Roseville, California. I went to high school not too far from there.
Cool.
All right. Yeah, it is. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Sally, you're going to continue your summer vacation tech series, aren't you?
I am all about taking vacations and the technology involved. And I have to have a disclaimer here. You know, maybe I'll burst your bubble a little bit, but being a tech person, I am not a cell phone data plan person.
Right.
Probably for a couple of reasons. One is I don't have many people to call. I'm on a wireless network with my husband who works across the alleyway. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of excitement. And until recently, Sleepy Eye really didn't have very good 4G coverage anyway. And then for another reason is I'm pretty cheap and I really like free wireless as opposed to paying for data plans. And so in that vein, when we travel, it becomes a little hard to stay connected because I just don't have the investment in the cell phone coverage to do that. At least not to the internet and things. I do have a track phone, a cheap phone, mm-hmm. that I can stay connected phone-wise. But one thing that we invested in, and I think I've talked about this in past episodes, but wanted to share it again, was a mobile hotspot. And this is the particular one that I have. It's from T-Mobile, very cheap. And the reason that I like the mobile hotspot is that it's pay as you go, kind of like my track phone. When I need to use it for vacation, I just add a card or add some minutes to it or some coverage to it. It's actually based on the amount of data transfer. And it can range from like $15 to $50, and it gives us plenty of coverage, and our whole family can share it. So it's not just on my iPhone or iPad or whatever that I have the data coverage, but it's a hotspot for up to 5 connected devices. So as we're rolling down the highway all the way to Mississippi, I can guarantee you we were all surfing the web as we traveled because of our little mobile hotspot and just a one-time $50, you know, plunk down the largest amount of data coverage we could get for this. We'll end up in the car for 4 days total, you know, yeah. So it was nice to have that and cheap really compared to investing in a 2-year contract for a data plan of some type.
For sure. Yeah.
And there are other mobile hotspots out there. T-Mobile has met our needs. It kind of all depends on that coverage map and where you want access to it.
T-Mobile's making some nice advancements. They're getting some good press these days. So not a bad choice there.
So the other thing that I do using my cheap little cell phone is I oftentimes tweet, and I can do that from my cell phone. And it's just a capability you may or may not be aware of. But Twitter does have the ability to use texting from your cell phone to post a tweet on your Twitter account. And so you have to jump through a few hoops, set it up, and they have a short code that you use, and it recognizes your cell phone number and associates that with your Twitter account. And I'll post links in the show notes if anyone's interested in that. But if you connect your Twitter account to your Facebook or to wherever, then you can update in one place and you know, share your tweets, that kind of thing. It's nice when your mom wants to know where you are and you're traveling to Mississippi. So just a couple of tips from me, and I'm sure that's kind of a different experience than for most of you, but affordable at least, and gets the job done. So
very good. My pick is another pick from Google. And this is something that they launched recently at their developer conference a couple weeks back, an expansion of their Google Music service. You could always upload your music and purchase music on Google. Now you can also subscribe to what they call Google Music All Access. And it ties in with your Google Play account. And you don't have to have, an Android phone to take advantage of this, although it allows you to play it both on Android or iOS. There's apps for both. But basically, the concept is you can subscribe and then use it on up to 10 devices. So you have to sync your devices, whether it's a computer or a tablet or a smartphone or an iPod Touch or whatever it is. So you register up to 10 devices from which you could play this music. So that's an ample supply, probably. You can upload your own music, which I've done. So you can see some of the things that I've uploaded and stuff that you've actually heard on the podcast before. You can create radio stations based on music. You can create playlists. It's kind of a competitor to a bunch of different things, Spotify, RDO Moog, you know, those kinds of things, where you pay a subscription fee, and even Pandora because of the radio feature. And it's just got some nice layout and design, I think. The screen is taking that tile interface that we're seeing a lot of now with Google. And on the phone itself, I can, for those of you watching at least, you know, they carry that across. So you get the tile interface. And as you scroll through, you can create playlists. You get album art cover, so you can kind of see it. You can sort it by genre, artists, albums, or songs. You can get a whole list of the queue and remove things or move things around in the queue. Just a nice setup. And for this month and next month, up until June 30th, if you subscribe, you can lock in a lower discounted price. They're obviously doing this to promote the service, $7.99 a month before June 30th. So you can, for $8 a month, basically, you can basically play any song that they have in their library, and they have obviously millions. They compete on the same level as Spotify or those kinds of services, which is a couple bucks cheaper than those other services. So Spotify, Audiomoog, I think they're all like $9.99. So get a couple bucks off a month. And really, this is, I think, another nail in the coffin of services that where you purchase music, the music store where you're buying DVDs, or even services like iTunes where you purchase a song for 99 cents and then you own it. Here, you have to do the math, obviously, depending on how much music you listen to or how much you purchase. But for $8 a month, you have the entire library whenever you want to listen to it. It can be downloaded to the device for offline playing, which is kind of cool. So, before you go on your trip, you can download a bunch of stuff and then hook that up to your car stereo or whatever. Just a nice service that I think is worth considering for those of you that are audiophiles or just interested in keeping your music with you. So that is Google Music All Access.
I'm trying to take off on my tech vacation series there.
Yeah, nice tie-in.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move along to a Wells.net feature we have coming up.
Right. I wanted to remind you of our Wells Locator service. You can get to it easily from any Wells.net page. There's a link up at the top. And here you can search for churches, schools, worship services, all kinds of things contained in our locator service. And when you submit a search, it brings back a list of items that match up by that particular location. So if you're going to be visiting Sleepy Eye this summer, you can find out about our service times and church location and all kinds of things like that. One of the reasons I wanted to bring this, well, two reasons mainly. One is that it is available in our mobile devices, our mobile application as well. And there it is on Martin's screen, the Wells mobile app.
And you just click locator. Or locate. And actually, by the time this podcast airs, there may be a whole new interface for this locator app. So I think we're improving this. We use a third party to the same group that actually does the web version is going to redo this to fit more on a mobile screen and add some new features. So I'm excited about potentially seeing a new app or at least a new look and some additional enhancements there.
Very good. So breaking news, you heard it here first, folks. So
yep.
The second reason I wanted to bring it up is because I brought up the Wells Locator for St. John's the other day here in Sleepy Eye, and I realized that our summer worship times were incorrect. We had made a change recently to our worship times and forgotten to notify the Synod that the worship times had changed. And this shows up here, shows up in the mobile app. It also shows up in the Synod yearbook. So you want to keep your information up to date. And to do that is super simple. We'll have a link in the show notes to be able to email one of the people that manages this site and the data in the Synod database. And then there's also a separate email where you can send in a photo. You can see.
Please do that. Yeah, that's really helpful both in the mobile app and online to get a picture. And a lot of churches don't have a photo there.
Mm-hmm. So it's just a small little image that you can email into our web production staff and they'll get that added to the website for you. So make sure you check out those links. Go to the locator and check your church and make that something you do periodically to ensure that things are up to date. Perhaps your email address has changed. The title of the church is also a clickable link to your website. And if you haven't submitted a website, maybe you just got a church website or it's changed, make sure you check that as well. So just a good thing to ensure that it's up to date.
Absolutely. Good tip.
Okay.
Community feedback, Sally.
It is time, and we have some fun feedback to share this week, starting with a look at our Wells Tech Wiki. This is a site that, sadly, we haven't done a lot with recently, but it is a community site where anyone, any of our listeners can create an account and make updates to the site. And I just want to take my hat off to Jimmy Holub, who is out in Arizona and apparently has a heart for live event and worship technology, because Jimmy has spent a lot of time recently revamping this whole section of the wiki. And it's quite extensive. There's information about audio, electrical power, lighting, other stagecraft, system integration and controls. He's really just reworked the entire section. He's added lots of formatting and lots of great information here. And so thank you very much, Jimmy, for the time that you've invested here. And also, any of our Wells Tech listeners, maybe you have expertise in copyright issues or graphic design or whatever it may be, the wiki is always here for you to share your knowledge and assist other Wells churches and organizations in all different types of tech and ministry efforts.
Yep, that's what makes it great, just this whole crowdsourcing concept where we can leverage the many brains that are out there rather than just the individuals. So if you have even more to add to what Jimmy's got there, or want to put your own spin on it, that's what that wiki's there for.
Definitely. All right. Next up, I had mentioned a few weeks ago that I attended a Christian crowd writing event. This was unique. We came together to brainstorm screenplay ideas for a potential web or television series. And it had kind of a sci-fi flair to it, which fits well with techies for sure. And as a follow-up to that, the Christen Media Institute has posted a forum where you can begin to flesh out the ideas that were brainstormed there. And we will have a link in our show notes. Everyone's invited to create an account. And maybe this is on your summer bucket list. We talked about that last week. Maybe you want to write a screenplay, do something different, and use your creative talents in that way. So check out the forum and dig in and help the Christen Media Institute come up with a great idea for a screenplay.
Very good.
Next up, I tagged on Digo a presentation, a video podcast, actually, from my friends at TechSmith. They do this regular video podcast called The Forge. And the reason that I wanted to share this was it was a great tie-in to our recently completed book discussion, Gar Reynolds' presentation, Zen. And Gar actually mentions Nancy Duarte, is that the correct pronunciation?
I believe so.
And her books, she has a couple out about presentations. And Nancy was actually a guest on this particular video podcast. And so I invite you to watch it and get even more ideas for great presentations. There were some great takeaways from what Nancy had to say. In particular, I love that. Oh, there you go. You're a card-carrying member.
Slideology.
Slideology, yep. By Nancy.
Yep. By the Art and Science of Creating Great Presentations. So this is kind of a companion to the book that we just finished reviewing, Presentation Zen. I know Gar is a big fan of Nancy, and they've worked together on different stuff. So.
Yep. She even mentions him in this interview.
Yep. There's her picture if you want to see that.
There you go. And you can see her on the video podcast. She talked about the person using storytelling techniques, which I thought fit really well with our conversation with Professor Paulson from MLC. And she said, storytellers keep your attention because the hero of the story typically has either a magical gift, a special tool, or helps the person in need get unstuck in some way. And she challenges you in your presentations to give your audience that same kind of thing, either a magical gift, a special tool, or help them get unstuck. And I thought that was a really neat way to look at presentation development. So I think you'll enjoy the interview. I'll also post a link to a TED Talk that Nancy did, if you want even more of Nancy Duarte. It's good stuff.
Very good. Good find.
Yeah. And lastly,
that's from Gail.
Community feedback. Yep. It's a Chrome plugin. It's called Writebox. And Gail says, this app from the Chrome store can be used on Chrome browser, Chromebook, iPad, or iPhone. You can sync. If you already use Dropbox, this is a must. You open the app and you can start a new document or open one from your Dropbox or Google Drive and start working. It makes data flow on the iPad work. A little play on words. It makes data flow a snap, I think is what she intended to write there. So I think I'll be installing the app and checking it out.
It's a distraction-free concept. We've talked about these in the past where really you don't have all the formatting and some of the distractions of, you know, ribbons and, you know, drop downs and those kinds of things. You just have a blank screen and you start writing.
Right. It does work offline with and syncs back up to Dropbox when you come online. Then I think Gail's big point is that you can work on documents on the iPad, which is a big benefit. So so your iPad docs are in the cloud through Writebox. So.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing that I think Chrome is getting better and better at, is that offline, even though it's a browser. Mm-hmm. Which indicates that it's on the web by its very nature. You have a lot of things with these plugins that you can do offline, whether it be Google Docs or things like this. And that makes a lot of sense. I think they're trying to plug, you know, their Chromebooks, which, you know, do need a connection to be fully functional. But there's a lot of things that you can do in offline mode, and this is just another example of that. So, cool. Nice find, Gail.
Thanks for sharing, Gail.
If you would like to contribute, you are encouraged, highly encouraged, to do that at wellstech.wells.net. We have all kinds of avenues through which you can share your thoughts, your ideas, future topics that you'd like us to cover, suggested interviews, those kinds of things. Facebook, Google+, Digo, Pinterest, the list goes on and on. Send us a voicemail, all kinds of stuff. Or just send a plain old email, wellstech@wells.net. We'd love to hear from you. Sally, what are we going to do next week? Which is like 4 weeks from now.
Thankfully, it's 4 weeks from now because we're starting our summer series. Longtime Wells Techers will realize that in the summertime, we often take a break from our traditional format and focus on one topic or one genre of topics. And this summer is no different, and we've got something big to tackle, Martin. I hope you're up for it. And I hope I'm up for it because I think it was
your
idea.
Yeah.
But our big focus this summer is going to be content for your church and school website. And I think we spend a lot of time talking about the technical side, the how to do church and school websites, where the real work is in the content. And we'd like to share with you ideas for all components of your church and school website. And we're going to do that in a different format, something new for us and a challenge. We're going to write an ebook together. And each week we'll add chapters to our ebook as we look at different components of your church or school website, from the homepage to live streaming to calendaring and all different things. We're going to talk about what to put on your sites, and hopefully it's going to be a benefit to you, and it certainly will be a learning experience for us. So wish us luck.
Tires on an open source ebook writing tool. I forget even what the name of it is.
Book type.
Mm-hmm. Right. So cool. I'd like to say I'm really looking forward to that, Sally, but I'm a little queasy.
Oh,
we'll see.
I'm going to make you a believer. It's going to be great.
So if nothing else, tune in to see how we're doing. Encourage us.
Moral support.
That's right. Let's close the show. Speaking of moral support, with a great song from Cross to Glory called One Name. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We do appreciate you tuning in each week. Bring your friends, and we'll talk to you.
Burden buried, bound in slavery, labor long and far from home, working, wishing, wanting, waiting, not forgotten, not alone. Exodus must be the answer. The power of God intercede. guiding God in through the waters. Fire and cloud, take the lead. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. Finding, feeling this new freedom. Yet there's grumbling on the quest. No satisfaction, no thanksgiving. Put the giver to the test. Gracious God, he gives in mercy, even to faithless cries. Water from the rock is flowing, bread and bird from on high. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. Looking, lusting, longing, idols. God of self and God of gold. Pagan treasure, fleshly desire. The human heart would be sold. Dying souls need their salvation. The Lamb of God slain to kill. Lifted high with our sin bearing. All who look to him will live. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. One name to bring me out of this wilderness. One name to set captives free. One name alone to lead to the promised land. One name to Christ, glory be. One name to Christ, glory be. Only one name under heaven, Christ by which we must be saved.